from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We obviously spent a good bit of time on yesterday's program talking about Owen Popoe, that upcoming decision on May 5th. You know by now, that's what we do here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. We sort of, you know, we get into the weeds, as you might expect, on some of these recruiting decisions, especially when it comes to five-star linebackers. And, you know, what we talked about, and we'll recap some of this with Jeff Sintel here in a moment, but there's some concern right now. And I was reading the forum about this forum at forum.dognation.com. That is the great message board where Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers and dognation.com readers all kind of get together and congregate about the goings on of Georgia football. And there was definitely some concern, you know, coming off yesterday's show and kind of coming off all the things that have been sort of building up here the last couple of days about what five-star linebacker Owen Popoe, the big star from Grayson High School, what decision he's going to make when that decision comes on May the 5th. And, you know, Jeff Sintel, for what it's worth, when he was on the program yesterday, did not completely stamp out those rumors, though, that innuendo, if you will, that Owen Popoe might be trending in another direction. Jeff didn't completely stamp that out at all. And in fact, he did admit when he joined us yesterday here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza that there has been some chatter, some insidery type chatter as of late about Popoe maybe trending in the direction of one of the Dogs' hated rivals, the Auburn Tigers. Here's a reminder from Jeff Sintel on that point.
It seems to me over the last couple of, at least the last 10 days, there's been some kind of insidery feel going around about momentum for Popoe to Auburn. And I'm sure there are linking factors here. There's like linking factors with the time he spent at Auburn recently with his teammate Wanya Morris. Wanya Morris has Auburn and Tennessee in his top two. I think with Popoe, no matter what the decision comes down on for May the 5th, I think this probably still needs to be seen as a long play equation for Owen Popoe.
And that's that last phrase there that's going to end up being really important here. Jeff sort of alluded to that over and over when he joined us on the show yesterday. We'll probably keep alluding to that over and over here over the next few days when we kind of talk about this leading up to that May 5th decision date for the five-star linebacker Owen Popoe, that regardless of the decision he makes then, you know, this thing could very well go into December in terms of, you know, what might happen between Georgia and Owen Popoe here. You know, this is going to be sort of a long-term play. The other thing that Jeff sort of said yesterday that I thought was interesting, and we talked about this ourselves, is that if you really want to go back in time to a year ago, there were two pretty significant, you know, pieces of bad news involving players very similar to Owen Popoe. You know, Brenton Cox chose Ohio State as his college commitment because he thought Ohio State had a chance to get him to the NFL better than Georgia was going to be able to. Adam Anderson chose LSU because they were going to offer scholarship opportunities to two of his high school teammates there at Rome, in Jamarcus Chapman and Jaquan Griffin. And as Jeff Sintel said yesterday on Dog Nation Daily, there is an element of what's happening with Popoe that, at least to a certain degree, kind of feels a little bit like Adam Anderson, Brenton Cox a year ago. Two guys that initially chose other schools before finally ending up in the Georgia class when it was all said and done for 2018. A little more from Jeff. I think this is interesting.
Everybody remembers where Brenton Cox was in April of 2017. Everybody remembers where Adam Anderson was in 2017. And there is a long way to go in whatever eventual decision is going to happen for Owen Popoe. And I can even classify the long way as 25 days. There is a lot that can likely happen in 25 days, much like there's a lot that has happened over the last 3 weeks between Owen Popoe and Auburn.
Another interesting wrinkle to what Jeff said there, and the reason why we're kind of recapping some of that from yesterday's show, is because I've really heard from a lot of you on it, a lot of online chatter about that very subject there. So some kind of interesting stuff, you know, in that regard, in that, hey, not only is it going to be a long time between now and the end of the 2019 recruiting cycle, but even between now and May 5th, there's a lot that could happen between Owen Popoe and Auburn, or Owen Popoe and Georgia here, because if you really look back on the recruitment of Owen Popoe, the one thing that you see a lot of has been a story that has been filled with twists and turns. There have been presumed leaders. Those leaders have changed. There have been top threes. Those top threes have somewhat dissolved. There have been a lot of twists and turns and ups and downs and roller coaster rides when it comes to Owen Popoe. Here's a little more of Jeff's intel on that subject.
There's a lot of things that have happened for Owen. You remember Owen was initially going to commit to Florida State. He was initially then trending to Clemson. And then he had a final three, I think he established last November, that included Clemson and Nebraska. and Georgia. And now Clemson and Nebraska are no longer in the stratosphere, the ozone layer of Owen Popo's decision. The one constant there for everything has been Georgia. And I don't think Georgia has done anything to lose steam or lose gas. I just think this is a question where Auburn is really coming on strong.
So, couple things there. The first thing, obviously, it's a positive reminder from Jeff here that while things have changed a lot for Popo, it's always been some other school and Georgia. It was Florida State. It was Clemson. Now it's Auburn. But the chief competitor to that other school, when there has been one, has sort of always been Georgia. They have remained a somewhat, you know, consistent constant in the Owen Popo recruitment story here. And I do think that is an important thing to remember and keep track of here. And it's one of the reasons why Georgia fans ought to retain some optimism about Popo, maybe both on May 5th and then for the end of the 2019 recruiting cycle when the Popo recruitment finally ends, that Georgia could eventually win out here, given the fact they have maintained sort of a consistent status with Popo the entire time. But it is undeniable from the first clip we heard from Jeff, the last statement Jeff just made in the most recent clip, that Auburn has kind of come on strong here. And I guess the point of doing all of that here this morning on Dog Nation Daily is to sort of ask the question of, does Auburn come on even stronger now that another one of his Grayson High School teammates is now connected to Auburn? Ja'Kai Clark, the three-star center, commits to Auburn here this week. If you're watching on video, you see some of the images that Clark kind of put out there. There's the handshake with Gus Malzahn, and then the classic Twitter edits coming up that say commit to Auburn. Good-looking edit there, at least if you're an Auburn fan, you like that. More of the Ja'Kai Clark commitment stuff, pledging himself to the Auburn Tigers. Then the announcement saying, hey, he's going to be a part of that for the next 4 years. WDE is the phrase that he uses. That's a high school teammate of Owen Popo committing to the school that Popo has also recently become interested in. And not too long ago, really just a couple days ago, Ja'Kai Clark, the offensive lineman that just committed to Auburn, actually spoke to Benjamin Wolk, our buddy from SECCountry.com, about his relationship with Auburn and that of some of his high school teammates. Let me read some of this to you here. He says, me, Owen, and Wani Morris, that's who Jeff also talked about there, the offensive lineman deciding between Auburn and Tennessee at the moment, we all talk. I'm not going to spill anything, but yeah, obviously Auburn is one of Wanye's top two. Auburn's one of Owen's top three or top five. We're all very interested in Auburn. I'll just say that. So one of the guys that apparently Owen Popo is talking to a lot, his high school teammate, now pledges his own commitment there to Auburn, which makes May the 5th pretty interesting coming up here for Owen Popo. The bottom line for me on the entire discussion is, I won't pretend to know one way or another what Popo's ultimate decision is going to be on May 5th, but I do think I know enough to say that that ultimate decision isn't actually the ultimate decision. This thing's going to play out for a while. The May 5th announced commitment may just be a de facto leader in the clubhouse here with plenty more recruitment to come. I do think Popo, though, is an important player for Georgia's 2019 class. I think he's potentially a pivotal building block for the future of this Georgia defense. As a fan of the Dogs, I want him in this class, and we'll all wait with bated breath to find out exactly what happens here. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We're the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we are glad you're with us, whether you watch us Facebook Live, YouTube, 10 a.m. on those various video channels. Listen to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the worldfamousdognation.com, SoundCloud, however you listen to the show. Thanks for checking us out there as well. We're just really glad you're with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, they want you to meet the boss. The boss of all cheese pizza. How about this? The big cheese comes with 5 blended cheeses, and an extra large right now is just $10.99. That's a great offer. One of the reasons why I love Marco's Pizza, first of all, because it is authentic Italian pizza. I like that part about it. It tastes great. But it's also pretty easy on the wallet there, too. I love the big cheese for $10.99. What a great deal from Marco's Pizza. And it is fun to have Marco's Pizza part of what we're doing here on Dog Nation Daily. Later on, we're going to have Mike Johnson, my partner from SEC Country Live. We'll talk to a lot of stuff about Mike. Some of it's going to be offensive line related, because there has been some offensive line related news from Georgia at spring practice here over the last couple days. We'll kind of get into some of that with Mike. And really, I want to spend a couple minutes also kind of talking about that on the program here right now for a moment as well, because you know, what you really see is a situation in which the offensive line would seem to be having some success against the defensive line so far during Georgia spring practicing. And Kirby Smart has really made no bones about this whatsoever. He's got some concerns about his defensive line right now. It seems like he probably feels pretty good about the starters, but the depth behind there, to listen to Kirby, maybe there's just not quite enough of that at the moment. Here he is.
We're struggling a little bit defensively on the defensive line. We just don't have as much depth, and we're not as physical as we need to be. And I don't know if that's a credit to them or a problem for our defense, but something we got to rectify, and we definitely need some help on the depth of the defensive line.
The them there is the offensive line, referencing the success they've been able to have. That clip was actually from a week or two ago. Kirby Smart impressed with the offensive line, concerned about the depth along the defensive line, going into a little bit more detail about that, saying, yes, you got Jordan Davis and Tremel Walford coming in this summer, but that's just two guys, and maybe just two guys right now, simply not enough, especially when you start factoring in some injuries into the equation. Here's more from Kirby.
Not many in that position. So, we're excited about the guys we got coming in. I think it's tough to play as a true freshman. You know, we had that crowd of Tyler and Julian and Mikhail and David, all that really helped us that one year. We're certainly going to need some help in depth-wise. I think the key is going to be staying healthy, because losing two guys like John and Trenton, I don't think you'd think it would have as much of an effect, but we really only gained one in Devontae Wyatt. So the sum effect of that with Michael Barnett being a little out has put us short. So,
of course, Devontae Wyatt, the original member of the 2017 class, got reclassified as a 2018 guy because of some academic stuff. That's a guy that Kirby also challenged on Saturday to maybe maintain a slimmer weight so that he can use his speed and effectiveness there as a defensive lineman. But the other thing you hear Kirby Smart reference there is that injury to Michael Barnett. That makes Georgia even thinner along the defensive line. And not too long ago, Kirby went into a little more detail about the Barnett injury.
He had a minor knee injury, and that's part of the issue. We think he's going to be fine. He's going to be back possibly by the end of spring, but may not make it back by spring. And that's part of the problem right there. I think it was Tuesday's practice. He had a slight dislocation, but we think he's going to be okay.
To make matters worse, Kirby Smart says you got to avoid injuries. Michael Barnett becomes one you have to deal with. And then we find out on Saturday another defensive lineman also not practicing right now because of a little bit of an injury issue. This time it's Justin Young. Here's Kirby on that.
He had a mild knee sprain, and we think we'll get him back before spring's over. But it just, you know, it seems like they're all in the same area right now with he and Barnett. But he should be fine.
Set by same area, Kirby's referencing the defensive line. Too many injuries, too thin there at that position. And so apparently a response here from Georgia to kind of add some depth, at least for now, to that defensive line as Chris Barnes, an offensive line signing from the class of 2016, really hasn't found a home yet on the Georgia offensive line. He moves over, going to practice at least for now there at the defensive line position. My guess is Kirby Smart will be asked more about this when he speaks to the media again. I think his next appearance is scheduled to be Saturday. When he speaks to the media there, I guess that Kirby will give you more details on what's going on with Chris Barnes here. Traditionally, I think of the transition from offensive to defensive line being a lot tougher than the transition from defensive line to offensive line. For instance, a guy like Lamont Gilliard, who at one point in time had been a defensive lineman at Georgia, he moves over to offensive line, becomes a terrific center. And I do think at this point in time, you can call Gilliard a pretty solid center there. He's made that transition nicely, but it seems like you don't see the door swing the other way quite as much. A little harder to go from offensive line to defensive line. So it's a tough challenge for Barnes to find a home on a defensive line, because you don't see that many former offensive linemen do that. But it's probably an experiment worth trying for Georgia, as Kirby Smart explained, because of the thin nature of the defensive line when you factor in injuries and the fact that you don't get two additional defensive linemen until the summer. And even if this is just a sort of practice situation for now, you know, that's still a that still makes it a worthy experiment here, because obviously the one thing that we have seen from Georgia, the hallmark of this program, is under Kirby Smart, that commitment to really stiff and tough practices. You got to have full complement of bodies going to go out there and get that done. So I don't know that we necessarily see Chris Barnes competing at a defensive line spot on the field this fall for Georgia, but certainly able to help out right now during practice. And that's a pretty strong contribution that from Barnes if he's able to make that. So we'll wish him well as he sort of participates in this position switch for as long as it goes. And hopefully this gives Georgia the strength that it needs to really do battle out there with another scrimmage coming and then G-Day coming up on April 21st. It's good to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Before we move on with the show and bring on Mike Johnson, I want to say a quick thing right quick. I had a chance to meet a great family at a Dog Nation Appreciation a couple of weeks ago, and young son Anderson, who is a big UGA fan and was good enough to be with us there at Dog Nation Appreciation, he celebrated his birthday yesterday. Wanted to say happy birthday to him. They reached out to me on social media. Good to know that that family's out there enjoying a happy birthday for a young man there who's a big Georgia fan. Anderson, we appreciate you listening and watching to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza every day, and hope you enjoy a happy birthday. For the rest of you who are out there with us here today, hope you enjoy the rest of the program. We've got some interesting stuff coming up from Kirby Smart a little later on. For now, though, it's my partner from SEC Country Live. It's Mike Johnson here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And I'll say hello to him. He, of course, with me every afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook and YouTube pages. It's Mike Johnson here on a Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And, Mike, thanks for the time today. How you doing?
I'm doing really good, man. How about yourself?
I am doing really well. Let me talk to you briefly about something we were just talking about a moment ago. Georgia thin on its defensive line. Going to, at least for now, try an offensive lineman over there. That's Chris Barnes, a 2016 signee who really hasn't, you know, found a lot of room to play there on the offensive line as of yet, but good enough to take on the position switch, going from offensive line to defensive line. My assumption's always been that the door doesn't quite swing the same way going from OL to DL as it does the other way. You know, Lamont Gilliard, Georgia center, is at one point in time a defensive lineman. He's made that transition pretty well. But it seems a lot easier to go from defensive line to offensive line than offensive line to defensive line. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that assessment right off the top. Listen, defensive linemen, it's no secret, are usually – more athletic of the two. Usually you're able to do more with your footwork, with your arm strength, with your chest strength. So it is a little bit easier of a transition. I think what Barnes is going through right now, I've seen quite a few guys do in my time in college football. It's a depth body. It's a chance for them to get on the field. It's a chance for them to try to find meaningful snaps as a defensive lineman. And honestly, for a lot of guys that I know that tried it, at least for a spring, it was fun. You know, it was fun to get over there and do one-on-one pass rush and not have to worry about getting ran over. You know, it's like, hey, let me get on this side of the ball for a little bit and enjoy it. So you're right. I mean, the door doesn't swing the same both ways, but, as far as a camp body goes and a guy to play during spring, I'm sure he's having a good time.
And you kind of, call it a camp body or depth body. I made a similar point a moment ago, and I don't think either one of us are being flippant when we said that. You obviously can speak to this as well as anybody because you went through intense practices at Alabama. To me, the number one sort of hallmark of being able to have quality practices are being able to have a lot of players out there, right? I mean, you can't have good scrimmages unless you got a lot of guys that can kind of, provide those practice reps out there. You got to have bodies at every position. Otherwise, it just seems like your practice is going to be a little weaker. So, Georgia not having enough defensive linemen right now, that affects the entire team, right? How the offensive line practices against these guys, how the rest of the defense can operate in sort of a scrimmage or a full contact, full pad scenario. That when you say someone's contributing as a practice body, that's not sort of a disregard of that player, because being able to provide numbers during practice is a pretty important part of championship teams, is it not?
Yeah, it's definitely meant in no disrespect at all. I mean, it is what it is. When you look at how these practices are conducted, Brandon, I mean, me and you have talked about this a few times. They're on a time limit. You know, this is not like you can go out there and practice for 4 hours. They're not on a time limit. They have to get as many reps in as they can. Well, if you go from, say, 10 offensive linemen down to 9, well, then somebody's pulling double duty. It's the same way on defense line. Somebody's pulling double duty. Somebody's getting all these snaps. Somebody all of a sudden, before you know it, he's got three times as many snaps as somebody else if his backup or the guy starting in front of him goes down. So it is. It's all about getting snaps. It's about getting quality snaps. If a guy's been out there for 30 plays in a row, well, guess what? You're not getting any quality film on him. He's not getting any better. And so it's better to try to even things out before these guys get here during the summer, before the guys get there during the fall. Even things out the best you can. Move the bodies around. Try to give a guy an opportunity to get on the field for the G-Day game. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's definitely a necessity at this point in the year.
Your team, Alabama, has gone through what I think of as a relatively major offensive line overhaul, sliding some guys around left side to right side, guards, tackles, things like that. Georgia's going through a little bit of a minor overhaul, moving Solomon Kinley, at least for now, from right guard to left guard. You've also got Kendall Baker, last year's starter at left guard, kind of cross-training as what I think of as sort of the sixth man, tackle, guard, backup, maybe on both sides of the football there. For those of us who did not play offensive line at the highest level possible, What is truly the difference between left side and right side? Is it all about whether your quarterback is left-handed or right-handed? And what's the difference between, you know, guard, tackle? I mean, how big of a deal is it to sort of slide these positions around? Is it a huge change, only a minor change? What's it like for the guys trying to do that right now?
Yeah, it's tougher than most people realize, you know, especially with your footwork. And, you know, I try to explain to people the in-depth nature of playing offensive line. You know, you've got your ankle flexion, you've got your body treated a certain way to where you know, this right arm is punching this way, the left arm is punching this way. You got your left ankle flexed out to be able to take away the inside move. And then all of a sudden you switch over. And it's not just as easy as, you know, being a basketball player and sliding left and sliding right. It's all about ankle flexion. It's about being able to react to the inside move. It's also about communication with the guys around you. So it's definitely not easy. I'm not going to sit out here and act like it's, you know, a major overhaul. You deal with different size bodies, you deal with different size people, different types of double teams. But, you know, along those same lines, it can be very difficult to get in there and do it. It can be, you know, a stress on a lot of people. Some guys don't have the length. Some guys don't have the lower body power. And some guys are just meant to be one or the other. You know, it's just the bottom line. You got a 340-pound guard, probably not going to move him out to tackle. So it's a learning process. Any guy that can do it has a great future ahead of him because, they, you know, as you know, that you know, you're dressing seven guys in the NFL, and that's why guys don't mind cross-training. And so you see injuries pop up. Georgia's seen it the last couple of years. Alabama's seen it the last couple of years. And having those guys that can do that is very valuable in the end.
Let me follow up on a couple points on that, because to be specific about one player, Solomon Kinley, for at least part of the season last year, he was a little banged up at the beginning of the year and then probably lost his job to Ben Cleveland at the end of the year. But Solomon Kinley was a starter for Georgia at right guard. For multiple practices now, he's been seen working with the number one unit at left guard. So you're saying that is a different position. It's more than – I did play basketball in high school, so you sort of think about staying on one side of the court as opposed to the other. That it's different than that. That Solomon Kinley going to left guard is having to learn some different things then.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's having to learn different leg position. He's actually having to stretch out the muscles in his right leg, whichever one's his kickoff leg, whichever one's his reactionary leg. I mean, it's not as simple. You know, I think the best kind of way to talk about it, it's not slalom skiing. You know, you're just not going left to right. You're kicking left, you're kicking left, you're kicking left, and you're reacting back to the right. So it's a lot more in-depth in that way than most people realize. What I was trying to say is that you have to learn to train your feet like that. You have to train your knees to bend certain ways. You have to train your arms to do different things. And that's why it's important to do this in the spring. You don't want to do that in the fall when a guy has a job locked up. You try to get them over and get some reps at that position before you can really make a solid assessment of where they're at.
And then, you know, when you talk about a guy like Kendall Baker, who, you know, it seems like Kirby Smart kind of likes this. He's done this with Deshaun Sims. Seems to be doing this, if I'm guessing correctly, with Kendall Baker, where, you know, you get that guy ready to be a backup at tackle. You get that guy ready to be a backup at guard. Is this the kind of thing that you've seen before? You sort of have that guy that you can kind of slide in as maybe a primary backup at multiple positions like that?
It's very important. I mean, I can't tell you how important that is, especially for a team like Georgia this year that's trying to make a championship run. To have somebody that can do it at multiple positions but also know the offense well enough to where they're not green getting in there trying to communicate with a tight end, trying to communicate with a guard. Somebody that's been around the offense, somebody that knows it in depth, somebody that knows you know, how to play the different positions. They can get in there and communicate. Listen, when you're in the second half and you're playing a team like Auburn, you know, and they got that defensive line coming at you, or LSU down in Baton Rouge, and somebody goes down, you don't want somebody coming in there that's never played a snap before. And I think that's what's important for them, to try to get these guys cross-trained. That way, when it does happen, it's not a shock to anybody. You get somebody in there that knows the offense, knows how to communicate, and can get the job done.
So you and I joke sometimes on SEC Country Live. And by the way, for the folks that have never watched an SEC Country Live, I hope you'll check us out. 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook and YouTube pages. It's a fun show to do. We also have a podcast for you that you can subscribe to, Apple Podcasts, Android, all the other stuff on that too. But we joke sometimes about me maybe speculating too much, reading too much into what some of these coaches say, Kirby Smart in particular. And, Mike, the one thing that I've noticed some this spring is that, you know, Kirby has either outright complimented Justin Fields, his backup quarterback, his incoming freshman, the way that he did on Saturday, or just sort of peppered some field stuff into conversation with other players. Talking about the secondary the other day, for instance, saying they're going up against two pretty good quarterbacks during practice. That seemed to me to be a reference to Justin Fields there as well. As a fan, I take that as good news. It sounds like that Justin Fields is fitting in well enough at Georgia practice here in his first go-around this spring to make the number two offense run somewhat competently, and I take that as a pretty good sign for Fields' development. How do you read into all of that?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. You know, I kind of mentioned to you the other day that I don't think Kirby Smart at this point in time really gets anything out of saying anything bad about Justin Fields. You know, this guy is going to be a contributor. He's going to be a, you know, he's a five-star quarterback. He's highly sought-after prospect. He's going to be a contributor in some way. So I don't know that Kirby Smart gets anything out of saying, boy, you know, Fields, I don't know, he's kind of scraping for playing time. But I think you have to read Kirby Smart's words and think, you know, Kirby is not the type of guy that's going to go out of his way to compliment somebody. If he's not doing well, he probably just doesn't talk about him at all. And so I read into that being something good as well. I, you know, if he's making the second team offense run with a little bit of efficiency, then that means he's moving in the right direction. Remember, this kid's supposed to still be in high school. And I think a lot of people forget that when these kids show up on campus, that that's why Kirby Smart doesn't want to talk too bad about him. This kid's still making the transition. It's important to bring him along slowly and understand that, listen, you might have been one of the greatest quarterback prospects in the history of college football, but you're still 18 years old, and you're still learning this offense, and we're still going to bring you along slowly. So tempering expectations, I think, is just not only for Justin Fields himself, but for fans in general, is what Kirby's trying to go about doing, I would think, in my mind.
And I guess that's the part that sort of fascinates me here. You use the phrase tempering expectations. You say, you know, Kirby doesn't get anything by speaking negatively about Fields. That's probably true. But I guess what I find fascinating, and maybe it's not as fascinating as I find it, but what I find fascinating is that Kirby Smart, for the moment, is not scared off of the Justin Fields hype. He's got a very good, firmly entrenched starting quarterback. He's got a backup that's got legions of fans, given the fact that he's a five-star quarterback. And for the moment, Kirby Smart doesn't seem all that intent on throwing any kind of water on that. You know, he's just sort of letting it be. From a very good starter, Fields apparently, at least for now, by the definition of spring, a capable backup. And there's not a whole lot of engineering with Kirby's words here to, you know, dissuade people from wanting to, you know, make their own statements about the quarterbacks or maybe even make comparisons between the quarterbacks. Kirby doesn't seem too afraid of that at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, I think the one way to look at that, though, for me, having been through a similar situation with Bama last year, is Kirby's feeling good. He's feeling high on the hog. Well, he's got two capable quarterbacks right there sitting in the quarterback room. The one thing I will guard you against, though, B.A., is if at some point in the first few games, if Jake Fromm does come out and struggle against the defense, or he's not able to do something, or not able to convert a third and one or third and short, and all of a sudden you kind of wish you had a running quarterback, that's when I think Kirby Smart has to start to temper expectations.
Yeah.
Because that's when all the chatter starts. And me and you have talked about it a million times. Most popular guy in the building is the backup quarterback. And so I'm with you. At this point right now, I think Kirby Smart says, listen, well, I'm good either way. You know, I think I feel good about whoever we put on the field. Both these guys are really dynamic in their own right. But I don't expect that to always be the story, in my opinion. I think at some point, the hierarchy in that quarterback room will have to be addressed.
I think you're right on both fronts. On the one hand, I think Kirby Smart does view this as a good thing because it's always better to have two good quarterbacks if they're the coach because it just gives you more depth. And, you know, what Kirby says, if there is a moment of struggle for Jake Fromm this season, that's when it's going to really matter. I think you're right on both those points. In a couple minutes after you say goodbye to us, we're going to hear some more audio from Kirby Smart on today's show talking about what happened behind closed doors at the scrimmage, which was held indoors on Saturday. I thought that Kirby said some kind of interesting things about that. I think it shows a metamorphosis for him as a Georgia coach. I'll get into that more in a moment, but as a guy that went through a lot of these scrimmages at Alabama, you know, we see the G-Day, or in your case, what's known as A-Day. We see that stuff with our own eyes. We only hear tell, for the most part, about the scrimmages that go on during the spring. How close to real football is this stuff? Because a lot of judgments, a lot of evaluations get made off of what happens with these scrimmages that are almost always held on the weekend. People win starting jobs. There are, you know, whispers about so-and-so looked good, so-and-so didn't. What actually happens behind closed doors at one of these sort of classic spring scrimmages?
You know, what's funny is people say, you know, boy, you know, it'd be fun to go out and get a scrimmage. These scrimmages are not fun. I got to tell you, from a player's perspective, I mean, you're going out there trying to get as many snaps as you can. And a lot of times you'll hear the numbers come out. Man, what is it? LSU ran like 140 plays in their scrimmage,
yeah.
You know, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, just think about that. That's outrageous. I mean, yes, that's 70, you know, snaps on both sides of the ball. But
it's almost two full games by SEC standards.
Right, and LSU's got, what, seven, maybe eight scholarship offensive linemen? What does that tell you? Somebody's doing double duty. They're also doing, you know, gassers afterwards or 50-yard sprints or 110s. It's not fun, but I think these are so important because you do separate the men from the boys, not only physically, but I think mentally. You know, you're getting tired. Maybe it's hot inside the stadium. Maybe you've had, you know, 20 plays in a row. who can get the job done at that point? Who can you look to on that team as somebody you can look forward to actually handling their business when they need to? Who can deal with the pressure and deal with it when their back's up against the wall? I think that's what these scrimmages bring out in guys. It's not, there's a light mist, or hey, it might be a little bit cold out. Can you get the job done? When somebody's not looking directly over your shoulder and telling you exactly what to do, I think that's exactly what these scrimmages are designed to do in those cases.
And a quick final point on that subject, at a place like Georgia, and I'm assuming Alabama here as well, it's not ones versus two, it's starters versus starters. It's best offense against best defense, which only makes the competition that much more intense, correct?
Yeah, it definitely is. And they'll mix it up. I mean, they'll start off going ones versus ones, they'll go ones versus twos, they'll do actual scrimmage game-like situations. You'll get a red zone period, you'll get a goal line period, you'll get a third down period, and you'll throw in some 2 minutes. And I promise you, those guys will sleep good after that scrimmage is over. They will go home and get right in bed, because that is exhausting. But like I said earlier, it's something you definitely have to have in these spring kind of scrimmages to bring out the guys you can really rely on in the fall.
All right, 3 p.m. Eastern time, SEC Country Facebook page, SEC Country YouTube page. Mike, we'll look forward to seeing you there for SEC Country Live. Thanks for your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today.
Thanks, B.A. See you this afternoon, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff there from Mike Johnson. I love him on SEC Country Live. It's fun to have him here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Join us at 3 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon if you've never done that. SEC Country Facebook and YouTube pages will give you a chance to see us there. I'm going to do the SEC Through in a moment. A few stories I kind of want to run through here. Let me take care of some business before that, because a lot of you have been asking about what's G-Day going to be like. Well, I can't tell you everything for us yet in terms of the spring game week, but I can tell you some of the stuff is kind of falling into place and falling together. First of all, make plans to see us on Tuesday. It's April 17th at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. We're going to be there from 6 to 8 p.m. Come on by and see us there. It's going to be a huge, huge night as we preview the spring game. We look back on everything that's happened at Georgia spring practice thus far. It's this upcoming Tuesday, April 17th, Marlowe's in Brookhaven, for a very special big game preview of the spring game. So join us there for that on Tuesday next week. Also, I can tell you that after the game on Saturday, we're going to be back at our customary home at the UGA bookstore. Excited about that. Bookstore's also got a lot of big things coming up over the course of G-Day week itself, including next Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray going to be on hand signing autographs. $10 gets you an autograph and a free picture with Aaron Murray there. So that's Friday. It's April 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. How about Saturday? On the day of G-Day from 10 to noon, Nick Chubb, the great former Georgia running back, he's going to – and boy, it seems weird to say former Georgia running back, but his eligibility has come to an end. He's going to be signing at the UGA bookstore. That's $40 for the Chubb autograph. But once again, you do get the free picture included with that. And then at 12:30, from 12:30 to 2:30, you've got Lorenzo Carter and Isaiah Wynn both signing autographs. They are $10 each. Free picture there as well. You can get more information at ugabookstore.com. It's the UGA bookstore. It's where the dogs shop. And a lot of former dogs signing autographs on a G-Day weekend. We'll be telling you more about that. And looking forward to being with you at the UGA bookstore after the game next Saturday. So it's going to be a busy week for us. We've got even more announcements coming up as far as what's going to be happening for a G-Day week. So stay tuned here to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We'll tell you more about that. Alabama makes its appearance at the White House yesterday, doing what is customary for national champions. And Nick Saban, listen, you know, I'm not a Saban fan, I'm not an Alabama fan, but you got to give credit where credit's due here. He is a sly dog at times. Making some recruiting calls from the White House. Hey, so-and-so recruit, just wanted to stop by and say hello. Yeah, I happen to be here at the White House right now. It's kind of a classic Saban recruiting move. It is worth pointing out, though. A lot of Alabama fans going to be like, hey, you know, this is this is what makes Saban such a great recruiter. And no doubt, you know, he is the incumbent here. He's the incumbent in the SEC, the reigning the national champion. If you study politics, follow that kind of stuff at all, the incumbent has just a natural advantage in every election. The newcomer, a little harder to oust the person that's been in office here before. But when it comes to these kind of tactics, trying them against Georgia, at least twice they haven't worked here recently. Remember, he had Brenton Cox in Tuscaloosa on the day that Alabama found out it was in the college football playoff. That playoff show is on. He's watching that. Brenton Cox sitting right there with him. But the panache and the pizzazz of that didn't convince Brenton to choose Alabama over Georgia. He chose Georgia instead. And they hosted, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, they hosted Tyson Campbell for the national championship parade here way back in January. That's a big, big moment, big stage, sort of like being in the White House. Use that for recruiting. Use that to your advantage. But you know what? That didn't work against Georgia either. Georgia got Tyson Campbell as well. So, yes, when you're the reigning national champion, you have some built-in advantages there, like being able to make recruiting calls from the White House. But when it comes to these kind of tactics from Saban here recently against Georgia, they have not worked. We'll see how it plays out for 2019. ESPN has called Auburn a, quote, mystery team. We talked about this on SEC Country Live a bit yesterday. I don't agree with this assessment of Auburn at all. I think there's very little mystery with Auburn. Now, some of the names of who becomes an offensive line starter, we may not know that. You know, who are some of these guys that sort of fill in and replace the pass rush of Jeff Holland? The offensive line, there's some new names are going to be kind of kicked around there. But for the most part, running back probably too. But for the most part, Auburn is what it is. This is a top 10 team that's probably nowhere near as good as Alabama or Georgia. Almost every betting market reflects that. Almost all the analytics, advanced stats stuff seems to reflect that. They're 25-1 to win the national championship according to the Las Vegas Superbook. That seems about right to me. You know, their over-under from Vegas is going to be somewhere around 8.5 wins, which means 9-10 is a strong possibility there. I don't really see them as too much of a mystery team here at the moment. A couple other quick stories I'm going to get to. Dan Mullen offered some praise of Emory Jones here this week, saying, you know, he's doing okay, but reflecting the fact that this is a young man that does like to tuck it and run a lot. That's obviously the thing that's sort of holding him back in terms of earning some playing time there at Florida. Interesting to compare Emory Jones to other freshman quarterbacks like Justin Fields at Georgia and how the two coaches are talking about them. That's something we continue to pay close attention to as Florida tries to find itself a quarterback. And then also something else we mentioned on SEC Country Live yesterday, pretty interesting comments from Mike Griffith, who covers the Tennessee Vols, but the fact that Will McBride, maybe the dark horse in that Tennessee quarterback race, but it sounds like against Jarrett Garantano here this season, this spring, sounds like he's done pretty well and maybe a surprise contender for that Vols QB job. We'll keep watching that as well, and we'll make that your SEC through. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, a moment ago when we had Mike Johnson on the phone here, we were talking about what really happens behind these closed-door scrimmages, the one that George went through this past weekend, they'll do again this weekend. What are those things really like? And Mike gave us his description, and I think Kirby Smart's been giving us a description of some of this too. And I actually find some of what Kirby Smart to say here to be kind of interesting. I told you on Monday that I thought Kirby was in a pretty good mood overall about how the scrimmage played out. Let's let you hear a little bit more from him on that. Listen to the phrase that he uses twice here. I think this is significant. Here's Kirby.
It was upbeat. It was some good popping, good hitting, good competition, especially on special teams and offense and defense. And thought it was really competitive. We got a long way to go to be the football team we need to be. The kids are buying in and competing. I thought that both offensive units moved the ball well, and defensively we played hard. We just got a lot of young guys and some guys banged up on the defensive line that it makes it tough. But I do think the guys are buying in and playing hard.
I think it's interesting that Kirby Smart uses the phrase buying in there twice, because that's a phrase we heard a lot in the early days of Kirby Smart. There needed to be a buy-in. In 2017, guys were saying they're starting to buy in. It sounds like the next phase of that sort of buying in process may be happening here in 2018, at least based on that comment, where that's more of just a expected ideal as opposed to something that you're seeing transform in real time. But exactly what does it mean to say you're buying into what Kirby wants in a scrimmage like this? Well, apparently it comes down to two words, and Kirby was pretty explicit about what those two words are. Here he is.
I think effort's a good word. I think physicality would be right there with that, because, you know, we don't tackle day to day like a lot of teams do. We're going to tackle on scrimmages. And so today was an effort and physicality day where guys get a chance to, the whistle doesn't blow early. We go all the way to the ground. And I think it's always good to see who plays well when that happens. So that was the goal, to have good special teams, good competition, and I thought we had that.
I think my point here in kind of bringing all this up is, listen to Kirby Smart right there. He sounds like a more seasoned coach to me, right? I mean, after all, this is now going into his third spring as Georgia coach. He'll have his third year in the field coming up this fall. And despite the great success enjoyed in 2017, he was still a relatively young coach. But 3 years under the job, you don't quite sound quite as young anymore. And what he expects from his Georgia players, that's been communicated now quite a lot. And all of a sudden now, maybe the players are able to sort of push themselves along based on that same standard. It seems like Kirby may be more comfortable here now. There's less teaching about what you want Georgia football to look like, and now there's simply the evaluation of how are you measuring up to the standard we've already been communicating. And it's not just the effort and the physicality. It's not just that toughness. We all always know that's a big part of what Georgia wants to do. But, you know, Kirby mentioned special teams there, which sometimes means you got players running around all over the place in a given practice and in a under the roof of the indoor facility. That makes that a little bit more challenging. It sounds like Kirby was okay with that part of it too on Saturday. Here's a little bit more from him on that subject.
It was great. It was well organized. I thought it was the best scrimmage we've ever had. Most of the time it's like chaos. Where's this guy? Where's that guy? Where's this guy? And we were really efficient with our GAs, getting players on and off the field. But, I mean, we did kickoff return just like we're in the field. I mean, just like we're in the stadium. So it was no different. We did PAT field goals just like we're in the stadium. The only difference is punting. So punting, we did everything real. I just threw the ball instead of punting the ball. So I get to throw the ball. And that way it's actually safer because I don't want to waste a punt where a guy misses a punt and we don't get a return. So if I throw it, it guarantees we get to cover and hit a return and cover. So it was no different to me than being at the stadium. And it was actually better because our guys were much more efficient at lining up.
Bottom line for me is championship teams have championship practices, and there's some buzzword phrases there: buying in, effort, physicality, organization, efficiency. Those are some hallmark phrases for good practices, which could mean good things for Georgia coming up this fall. All right, as we wrap up here today on a Dog Nation Deli presented by Marco's Pizza, first of all, some congratulations go out. Diamond Dogs on the – supposed to be a neutral side game. They're playing in a minor league ballpark in North Augusta. Against Clemson last night, some of the Georgia folks tweeted out some pictures. This did not quite seem like a neutral side game. There were a lot of Clemson fans there, but the Dogs get the win over the Clemson Tigers here. So a nice non-conference win here during the week for the Diamond Dogs there. Congrats against Clemson. And listen, in any sport, it's always fun, especially if you're a child of the 80s, always fun to see Georgia beat Clemson in something. So good job there. By the way, Gatorator countdown here on Dog Nation Deli presented by Marco's Pizza. We do it every day because we like think about beating up on those lousy, stinking Gators. 199 days from right now, Georgia does it again. It's our Gator Hitter countdown here. And, by the way, check out an interesting piece from Chip Towers at DogNation.com looking at Georgia running back, or at least future Georgia running back, James Cook. That's some interesting thoughts from him there about the incoming freshman. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza.